All right, we will call to order the City Council work session for Tuesday, January 28th. Moving to items, topics of discussion. Item number one, receive recommendations from Charter Commission to amend Chapter 2, 3, and 12 of the Charter.
I will take that, Mayor. So kind of over the last couple of years, been looking at the Charter and realizing that it's a little bit outdated, antiquated, and likely from the 70s when City of Ramsey became a thing, and went through and talked with the Charter last year about bringing forward some suggested changes, and they agreed to look at it. Did that in December, and ultimately we had more than what's in front of you this evening. They wanted to talk about some different language on a couple sections, but what they did support is in front of you tonight. So just kind of to quickly go through it. Really a lot of it is just kind of bringing our Charter forward with what's been historically practiced by the City Council. The one exception to that is probably the first section proposed to be amended under vacancy, Section 2.5. You know, we talk about when a council member resigns in writing or is removed from office and why that may occur. Really, it just says non-residents in the city. The city became represented by wards back in about 2002. So I think at that time, the Charter just didn't get updated, or maybe it wasn't thought about it. But, you know, as I was reading it, I kind of went, okay, if you're elected to a ward council member and you moved outside of that ward, should you still represent that ward? So I suggested that we add that in. The Charter supported it. I'm going to back up a little bit. So how this process works to amend the Charter, I should have started with that. There's multiple different ways that the Charter can be amended. It can be through a citizen request, and they would bring forward ballot question, put on a ballot. It can be through a City Council suggestion, where the Council would pass an ordinance. That would get sent to the Charter. If the Charter then passes it, then it goes to the residents through an election. Or the Charter can propose a change to the Charter. Charter Commission can propose a change to the Charter, which is what we're doing now. Goes to City Council, and if the City Council unanimously adopts it, it goes into effect. None of this would prevent the residents from saying, hey, no, in general, we don't agree, and we're going to put together a referendum to repeal certain ordinances. But for right now, this is coming from the Charter Commission to City Council. We're going through it this evening, kind of more of a question and answer, understand the idea behind the proposed changes. And then there's state law dictating the process overall. So what we would do is then bring it to the next regular meeting, have the council introduce it, and then vote to move it forward or not. And then there's a public hearing that's required so many days after you guys hearing about it, and then a final consideration so many days after the public hearing. So we'll work through that, but for purposes tonight, kind of talk about it so you guys are fully aware of what the idea behind it is. So that was the vacancies. You know, again, in essence, if you move out of your ward and you're a ward council member, you know, you would give up that seat. We'd go through a special election process then. Section 3.4, it's not in the actual ordinance itself, but it is in the redline version. There's just a small typo in the first section, or first sentence of 3.4.1. It reads now, except as otherwise provided in this Charter of State Statutes. It should read, or state statutes. So small typo change there that we would need to update in the actual ordinance. But the next, more of a major change would be 3.4.2. Right now, all of our ordinances require roll call votes. It adds a little bit of time. So the idea is we have our meetings on video. Those videos, at least for now, are out on QCTV since the beginning of time, more or less. I think it's back to like 2015. We have staff at the meeting to log the votes as council makes it. The final ordinance itself, if you look on the last page of this ordinance, it shows, maybe it's not here, but ultimately at the end of the day, when we mark down who voted yes or no, that's spelled out in by individual council members. So, you know, from a staff perspective, we feel like we have a good process in place that we feel like will still accurately log who voted and how. And then the other process that we have, if there happens to be a mess up on that, is you guys can always correct that at time of minute adoption. But staff's proposing to strike the requirement that the roll call vote is needed.
Are you looking for feedback now, or are you waiting until the end?
Yeah, if you guys want to give feedback along the way, definitely do that.
That would be easy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess that's one thing I wouldn't support changing. I think the ordinances are a pretty big deal. I think it's important that we have two different times to change them, because the core of what we do, and that should be, settled out individually, so in case someone says, oh, they just heard it wrong, or, I guess that's one thing I wouldn't support. I think it's important to have that. You say yes or no, your chance to say it, and then it needs to be there two times publicly.
I agree, we should keep roll call vote.
I agree with that.
All right.
Anybody that objects to that?
No. I don't feel strongly.
Yeah, I don't feel strongly either, Shannon.
Oh, I was going to go back to 2.5.
Okay.
If since we're going to baby this, or are we going to try to do this?
Yeah, if we can.
One big paragraph and then go back.
Let's take it section by section, just so it's fresher in our mind.
I support that one, that you must live in the ward, so if you move out of the ward, you should be giving up your seat.
I agree.
And that's immediate, right? I mean, like, the day your quote-unquoters are grace period or anything like that?
City attorney? How would that work if a council member moves? Is it immediately upon moving, or is there kind of a grace period on, I'm here for a couple weeks, but I'm buying a place or renting a place back in the ward?
I think when you move, you've committed a disqualifying act.
Sure.
So when you actually move somewhere else, in this case somewhere else, another ward, that would do it. So purchase agreement, even adding all your stuff, but when you're gone,
that's where you put your head.
That's the operative.
Okay. Anybody else? Kirsten, anything good on that one?
I'm just wondering, so I already asked Brian this earlier, but just ensuring that if we create that vacancy due to someone moving, that we're still ensuring that ward is advocated for and rightfully represented. So he said that obviously there's at large members that can take care of that. So that was a concern of mine. Another thought is just like, how are we going to, I guess, verify that people have potentially moved out of their ward if it wasn't like offered up by them voluntarily? I'm sure there's a good way to do that, as there's other elections that have been impacted by this, but just a thought.
Yeah, Councilmember Buescher, I mean, ultimately it's probably more than anything an on-your-honor system. Hey, I moved. Would we catch it eventually? Possibly. Whether it be utility billing changing, someone from the public pointing it out, and we look a little bit more into it, but... No, we're not going to sit and audit where your guys' residents are once a month or before every meeting to make sure you can still serve. But
is there any legal punitive action that would be taken on a legal side for that? If you were to, because we know of current events there, I mean, I don't know how far legal it went, but I know that it's kind of a big deal. Is there
legal recourse? But somebody, there would have to be at some point, unless somebody, I mean, assume somebody that's moving is going to admit that they moved, it probably would have notified everybody under normal circumstances. It's hard for me to imagine somebody sneaking a move into another ward. It would be the sort of thing that might happen by mistake. Somebody not realizing that that was going to be a disqualifying factor. There would have to be a determination at some point if that got resisted, but it's a matter of fact. I don't think it would be a very difficult thing to prove.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm just sorry. So one question that is, I'm a what if this thing. Say, I have a house in my ward, I live in my ward, I'm building a house still within my ward, and there is going to be a block of time in which I won't be living in my house because it's not finished and I've closed on my other house. So I have to go live in like a hotel down the street, this new hotel. Hopefully it's done. Would that be a disqualifying thing?
Good question. Glad you didn't write my bar exam. Under those circumstances, I think there's a certain measure of intent. I mean, it's eventually, if you declare yourself to continue to be a resident and you've got a structure, something you can point to, I think that the city would be hard-pressed, if the city were to want to insist that you were disqualified, if the situation were temporary. Usually when you're talking about residents, I think you're talking about permanent residents.
Like my house burned down. I can't live in my ward right now because my house burned down.
Well, that's an interesting question. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that I imagine could happen. So it would depend on what your intent was. So your house is down. You've got no place to go. You're a refugee. I think unless you were intending to establish residence outside of your ward, in other words, if it's your stated intention to remain in the ward, I don't think you'd present a difficulty there.
Is there any language that needs to be included, or is that implied?
Well, it might be worth taking another look at. I think as I read it, that was my understanding of it. But life being what it is, you just ask the gentleman down and I'm trying to imagine one of you renting an apartment in your ward because you want to run in that ward even though your real house is somewhere else. I mean, theoretically, sure. We've seen that example, and that's what I think you're referencing to down in Roseville in the legislative thing. But as a practical matter, I don't see it being a problem. But I'll take a look at it and so be very sure because as I read it, I didn't have a problem with it. Questions, we'll give it another look.
Okay. Chris?
I think you've got it right that, it needs to be about residency. We had an issue, a number of years ago, our mayor was spending a majority of his time out of the city, but he never changed his residency. He still resided in Ramsey and continued to serve. I think I was the last person that had this.
Ramsey for Ramsey?
Yes. And, for me, I mean, obviously I was aware of this, and I won a special election to be at large before I moved and gave up my Ward 4. So, I mean, obviously I was aware of the issues and made sure the timing worked out before.
When we did, when we added Precinct 3 to Ward 2, or Ward 3, I forget, was there any redistricting of the wards? We draw new lines?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so every 10 years with the census, that's our opportunity to change the ward lines.
Yeah.
And we change it based on population and projected population a little bit. And then within that, we establish precincts to make them as equal as possible too. We can change precinct boundaries from year to year, but the wards are every 10 years.
Is there a scenario where there'd be a member that might be redistricted out of his ward against his or her intent, and then we'd make a special exception for that while they serve out the term? Because I'd hate to see somebody on the border get redistricted and then have to step down. I could see not running again in that ward, but be ashamed to cut somebody's term 2 years short if they were redistricted, quote unquote.
So short answer is council sets the ward boundaries, so I would
think they would know about.
Think you guys would play nice.
Just that house.
Don't know. It's up to the
one down, Michael.
But I guess other question: would that be similar to just a midterm redistricting where they would still serve out their term because it wasn't on them? Or
no, if residency is a requirement and you change the boundaries, it would happen. At least the way I would ordinarily read it. Would happen the minute you change the boundaries. Someone was a disqualifier, wasn't there for, it's a qualification, and you're no longer qualified to be a council member. Ideally, what you would do is resign.
And not live near the ward boundary.
When we did ward stuff last time, that was, I'll say, a consideration. Mm-hmm. There's a whole list of considerations that was on the list.
Yeah.
It wasn't the driving force.
Yep.
But I mean, there was a map that had all of our houses on it.
Yeah.
And it was at least a consideration.
Okay. All right, that's all I have.
Just quickly to summarize, I think we need to think about some language to address maybe the temporary need. Build that in, but for the most part, if it's a deliberate move outside of a ward, sounds like there's support for incorporating that in.
Yep.
If you can say something permanent non-resident or something.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on, we'll skip past the roll call vote. We addressed that. Procedures on ordinances. So right now, our ordinances, they go forward to council, and for both times that the council sees it, they're on a regular agenda item. They're voted on separately from all others. There are times where, you know, it's clear that the unanimous council is going to support this. So the red language in 3.5 would state basically when we bring the ordinance forward to council the first time, we're still going to treat it like it is now. We do a presentation on it, things of that nature, and go forward with it. But if it was introduced unanimously, indicating that there's unanimous support, that we would place it on the consent agenda. This is more or less tied to the previous section about eliminating the roll call vote. So I think one could make an argument that we could still place it on a consent agenda, but that consent agenda would then have to be done by roll call vote. So I guess if you guys are open to the idea of keeping roll call votes, maybe this one becomes a moot point and doesn't get changed, and we just keep them all separate agenda items. But
Yeah, I think it's right. That's what I would think. Yeah.
Nobody's changed their mind on the first point, so then I would say it's a moot point.
Okay.
For a quick housekeeping note, I feel like in here, first name basis is fine with me. I don't know if anybody else is.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor.
It's fine with that, or if we want to stick to. Okay.
I'm good with first name.
I very possibly won't change, but I have a history of that, so.
Yeah, I don't mind either. I think it's
a little
more informal.
Nickname.
Whatever. Nickname for you.
He's Bud.
Okay. I keep calling people by their first name.
Section 3.7, this is related to the requirement to read the ordinances aloud, but charter as it sits today offers a waiver option if the majority of council agrees to it to waive the reading and then adopt it. Talking to staff, there isn't a staff here that can recall a time that an ordinance was read aloud, so, you know, save you guys some breaths and speed up a motion. I guess I'm proposing to eliminate that requirement. Not saying that you couldn't read it, but there's times where we have 150-page ordinances.
Okay.
I noticed the other... Ryan and Administrator Hagen. I noticed the other. He won't allow me to use his first name. So, you did mention that the other aspect is available for the public 3D working age prior. It's kind of pre-internet idea, right? Now it's posted online and it's not as.
Yeah, I mean on a zoning ordinance. That's the longest one. I mean, we post that thing on the internet generally the Thursday before Friday, maybe a planning commission meetings. It goes to planning. Planning holds the public hearing, and then it turns around and comes to council. So, I mean, it's like a two-month process from start to finish that it's out on the internet already. So it's definitely available.
Thank you.
Section 3.9 is when an ordinance has become effective. Right now it's 30 days after publication. State statute does require us to publish an ordinance, or at least the summary of it, in our official newspaper, which is the Anoka County Union Herald. Our charter says that the ordinances don't take effect until 30 days after. So, you know, in the case of a law change at the local level, you know, there's a period of time where we want that new law to be in place, but arguably if a resident goes and does something to their property that meets that, they're violating code. So, state statute just simply says upon publication, majority of cities do that. So suggesting that we just change that, it speeds it up. It allows ordinances to go into effect faster. Great recent example is the lodging tax. You know, perfect time to start that. When we first started talking about it, we were going to do January 1. By the time it got to council and passed, it was effective like January 6th or something odd like that. So allows them to go faster. Again, doesn't negate the ability for residents to file an appeal and try to repeal it. There's a process laid out in the charter for that. So thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Thank you. I originally raised this concern with Brian, and I'm fine with it now. Like, now that we've kind of reiterated that it's almost like 2 months, plus it's been public all that time, I'm kind of like, okay, I guess we can get rid of that 30 extra days, so it's not a 3.5 month process. So.
And there needs to be a second reading, correct?
Correct.
So it's going to be at least 2 weeks between council meetings.
Then the process too, if they wanted to do a referendum type of thing, there's no real time frame on that. That could be any time, right? I mean, is it
right? It's I don't have it, but it spells it out. And I mean, the reality is I don't know that the residents could get it organized fast enough. There has to be a petition and signed by like 20% of registered voters. I think it's going to take time, and quite frankly, I don't know if that much of Ramsey would pay attention that closely to know. I mean, that's the reality of it. I think our ordinances change often enough and people don't realize it until they have a need to look into it. So.
Okay. Go ahead.
One question. Say we want, as a council, this doesn't have a 30 day, but we want to put a start date on it for some reason. Could we?
Yes, you can set a future start date. So our fee schedule. Annual fee schedule, it's oftentimes, we'll get it adopted, but we won't make it effective until January 1 of the following year.
So we're prohibiting something in town. We're giving the residents time to abide, so we're not throwing law enforcement or court enforcement.
All right. Sounds like that's good.
In the last section, and probably the one that might have the most discussion, is newsletters. Our ordinance requires 6 newsletters at equal intervals or regular intervals throughout the year. So we do January, February, and then March, April, et cetera, et cetera. Following the recent year's budget and levy concerns and the increases, talking with staff, I asked, do we feel like we can have good quality content in 4 newsletters? We did talk about, do we even need to mail it out to each property? And I think the newsletter is appreciated enough in print format and mailed to all the properties that we're not proposing any change like that right now, but we do feel like 4 of them could be sufficient. We would match it with more or less the seasons, wouldn't necessarily go a on a quarterly basis. Again, other requirements of our charter are related to like budget information. Probably do like a November, December, January. Would be full of winter related articles, etc. So and then from a budget savings standpoint, it's about a $20,000 savings estimated right now. Thoughts on
this? Well, I support the way that this is written because it says there is at least 4 times a year. But I say that in the fact that I would not support going to 4 times a year. I support what we're currently doing. Because 2 things that we hear over and over and over is people don't get enough communication from the city, and that the newsletter is the number one source of the information. So I wouldn't support decreasing it, but the way that this is written, we could leave it at 6, and this gives us the ability to someday make a bad decision. Dan?
Ryan and Mr. Hagan. I agree with Ryan Lynn that, I like it 6 times as well. Same thing, just the communication and our demographics really seem to enjoy it. And so because I don't think there's any benefit right now to making this change. So I think we just leave it as is. And if a future council wants to switch to 4, they can, go through the process of changing it. But I think it's been there, it's been good. There's not really no pressing reason to make a change to it. So.
Jana?
I agree, we keep it.
Don't decrease communications.
Kirsten, any input?
Okay. I reached out to Brian on this one earlier as well, mentioning this kind of similar things that you guys had, that I had a concern about reducing the newsletters and not being able to quantify the satisfaction or engagement with our, you know, constituents if we're not reaching out to them as often. And then, you know, also trying to see if there's alternative ways to cover costs for some of these newsletters, which Brian mentioned that we are utilizing the local businesses to advertise in it, but we could be potentially doing more of that outreach. Although right now staff are kind of tied up with other things that are more, you know, taking priority, which is understandable. So I don't mind us saving money, but I also do lean towards the, I like it coming out six times a year as well.
Yeah, that was going to be my question is, our cost is $60,000, and that's less the revenue we generate from the advertising? That's, we're subsidizing it by $60,000?
No. Our total newsletter budget is about that $60,000 mark, and there's revenue on top of that. So it, our actual cost is not the full $60,000, but it's probably at least $50,000.
Okay.
The way our advertisement works is we work with a third-party gentleman. He solicits advertisements, and then we split that advertisement cost. I believe it's 50-50. I'll be honest, it could be better, but it's also one of those where we haven't had the staff time to take it in-house and maybe solicit additional advertisements. But it's definitely something that there's either the idea of we could maybe try to get more, or we could reduce down, eliminate the advertisements, make our newsletter shorter because there's not as much printing and pages, and maybe it's at least an offset, but we can continue to think about that.
Yeah, I would think, if anything, we would add a page and put advertisements on the back because it can become pretty advertiser heavy, but if that's revenue, then I'd almost rather see an additional page added where we can go grab, if there's a market for it.
Sure.
If we're cutting people off saying there's no room in the resident, I'd rather add a page, just have a page dedicated to marketing, maybe at a lower price. But maybe that's the way we can recoup some of the savings. But yeah, I would agree, we keep it at six. I think over communicating is better than under communicating. And I do know a lot of residents, especially in older demographics, that are a fan of it.
So, Mr. Mayor, are we saying not accept this change, or are we saying just don't change the number?
Well, I think there's an argument to be made by both. I mean, we're here, we were elected at this point to be the voice of the residents, so we could, if we say leave the verbiage in so that other councils can change it, I understand that because it gives them an easier path to doing that, but also we're here now, so if we say six is good, then I say we leave it at six and we eliminate the proposed changes.
That's what I support.
Okay.
All right.
I was gonna say Pat does a great job, and all you guys, mm-hmm, we're going to do a great job with it.
I will share that. So we will change this around a little bit. I feel like it was a couple years ago we had the Charter Commission propose some changes, and we moved some of them forward and not all of them. So we'll come forward and make that work again for your next meeting, so you guys can at least adopt the ones that you did like and then ultimately deny the ones that you didn't. And
so because we changed their recommendation, it needs to go back to the Charter? Because now I feel like now it's us recommend the Charter, and then they'll have to agree to it, and then it'll have to go on as a referendum? Or do we wait till they...
We're suggesting they change their recommendation.
But they need help.
So the guidance we received from our attorney a couple years ago was, let's split off the sections that you guys did like and put that as a separate ordinance, and then the ones that you didn't like, we'll put that as a separate ordinance, so at least we can move forward with this process. Is that still your opinion?
It was down, even for these now it is.
All right. So we'll do that. And I don't know that, you know, just when we met with the charter, and I don't know if anyone went back and listened in, I don't think it was anything that they felt super strongly on,
sure.
on this, but they understood why that it was being suggested from the staff level. So, you know, if some of these don't go, they're not going to be heartbroken and be mad, I don't think. There's a couple sections that we need to bring back. They typically meet once a year.
Yeah.
That's just because they don't generally have a lot of stuff to do. I think there's two sections yet that they wanted to hear again. So we'll be back in a few months with those. And
okay. Perfect. So then on to item two, Trap Rock Park Monopole cell tower lease.
So this is a Trap Rock Park. It's a dedicated parkland through development years ago. It's been used for a number of different reasons that Mr. Mark could explain. But reality is today it's a vacant parcel of land, most recently really used as a brush drop-off site during storms. We were approached by a company that wanted to put up a monopole, and Verizon is the user at this point, and they asked about Central Park. From the staff level, we didn't love that idea. Central Park is very busy with equipment and all sorts of stuff like that. So we pointed up to Trap Rock Park. They looked into it a little bit more, and they felt like it would still work for their needs. And they ultimately sent us a proposal following two recent amendments that the council approved within the last 3 years. I told them that they could do better on their proposal. It didn't even come close to matching what we've recently approved and supported at the council level. And they came back and revised their proposal. Didn't quite sweeten the pot to match those other ones, but they did make it better. So for tonight, I guess we're looking for direction from the council on, in general, do you support another monopole lease on city-owned land? It is revenue per the terms now. It's, can't remember how much, kind of quick, in the wrong case. But anyways, it would be revenue. Right now, our cell tower lease revenue just goes to our general fund, really just offsets the tax levy amount that we would need. I noted in the case, we could say, hey, this is new revenue. We could, you know, dedicate it towards park use or a portion of it, whatever you guys see fit. That's not a decision that would be needed to be made tonight, but something to think about. So right now we're seeing if council wants us to continue to work with this company to work through the formality of land use application, finalizing the lease terms and things like that. Do you guys want us to go back and negotiate and try to get a bigger lease? And understanding that, you know, there are other options for them. They could try to find a different property that's privately owned and go there. And we don't know what they would do, but generally, I think these types of companies like to work with cities because generally city land doesn't go away. So, thoughts on that?
Shannon and Dan.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that the staff went back and got us a better deal. Now that you mentioned more of a deal, because this other one is significantly higher, I wonder if it would be more advantageous to go back and see if they would get us a better back. Otherwise, overall, I'm okay. I'm of getting this for this type of park after researching where this park was, and it's not really being used. So why not get a little revenue off of it? However, if we could get a little bit more.
Here, quick note, I did share with them the terms of the recent ones, so their counter proposal to themselves, they were aware what the other ones were bringing in for the city. Looking back, the two that we recently amended, they started out as 25-year leases. Their proposed terms now are kind of in line with where those started, and their argument back to us, or you know, points that they made, is they've got a lot of investment up front with their infrastructure, so one idea I had is, you know, because they're proposing a 50-year lease, do we start maybe lower now, but then there's a sizable bump, you know, 20 years down the road or something like that to the revenue. I don't know if they would be open to that. I didn't have that conversation with them yet. But.
Dan and then Peter.
Thank you. How, so is this just, you know, when you say monopole, is that just your basic cell tower that you see around? Is it taller or shorter than most?
Yeah, so it's comparable to what would, it's at Alpine Park now, something like that. Their design is, it can be designed in a way, they've got a wind rating and things like that, so they can engineer it where if it were to tip over, it has like a breaking point, because we pointed out, you know, this is in a residential area. We steered them towards the west side of the property because that was farthest away from the homes. So they felt like they could engineer it and construct it in a way where it would be safe to be next to homes. And then again, we feel like even if they put it where it's proposed right now, we still have ample opportunity to do something else on that land.
I guess my only thought or concern would be kind of the aesthetics of the area. I mean, I would have to drive out there to look, but you know, it looks like the more, you know, rural area by Rio Light there, and I don't know how the neighbors or community would want something to pull, you know. I mean, we had the Connexus one built, you know, many years ago, and it's not terrible or anything, but you definitely notice it every time you look out the window and stuff now, where, you know, is that going to kind of ruin that rural aesthetic of the area? But
it could, and we did, so right or wrong, when they did some survey work to put together this proposed site plan, they put stakes in the ground, and we didn't think they were going to, and the gentleman we talked to didn't believe that was going to happen, but it happened, and we did get some phone calls, so that's where we note that we do feel like some community meetings would be warranted, just to gauge a little bit of interest or opposition. I do chalk it up as one of those where, does anybody want it in their backyard? No. But do people appreciate it? Yeah. You are limited on where they go. They're not exactly pleasing to look at, but I don't think cell phones are going away either.
Do we currently have them on, like, our water towers and things like that?
Yep, we have one water tower for sure. I don't know.
Yeah, water tower one only off the dysprosium. I'd also point out that they clarified that they would not need to have a light on it.
For airplane stuff.
Eric and then Chris. The Alpine monopole, there's a note on there that $500 a month per carrier. Would there be a part of the terms be if Verizon adds other carriers on the lease, would we see an increase per month?
So originally, no. And I asked that, are they able to put more in one carrier? And they said, yeah. And I said, okay, we want a share of that. They came back with $200 per month per additional carrier. So,
With a percentage increase over year?
Good question. I don't know. But
Chris?
Well, I would say we have two studies here of what fair market value is, and if they're not going to pay fair market value, then I would not support adding another antenna or another.
I took a look too as far as the cell coverage. The whole area is covered with 5G. It's the only thing that they're missing is 5G ultra band, which I think is what they're using for their home internet service. And the amount that is missed by 5G Ultra Band, I feel like, is very small. I don't know. I think looking at the Alpine one especially and looking at the drawings of it, I think it's a big eyesore. And I know I'm not a conspiracy theorist kind of guy, but I think having a high-powered antenna with cell service, I think people would object to that. For the benefit, as far as the revenue we're getting off it, I don't think it's worth it. I think the residents are going to be upset with it. And then as far as the need, I feel like the need's already taken care of. There's 5G coverage across the entire city, with the exception of a very small amount that would want a home internet service. And there's T-Mobile and stuff, too. So I don't see the benefit, especially at that rate, making it worthwhile for the residents, nor, I mean, it's just a big eyesore. It's big. I'm glad there's no light. That was going to be one of my questions, too. But I don't know. I've seen a few of these, and they don't make the neighborhood look better. Dan, you had
your hand. Yeah, I'm curious. What else could we do with that land? I know in a previous case we learned it's very difficult to sell off parkland. What other options could the city do with a pot like that? Are there other things?
I'll look to you.
Sure. Any park use would be doable there if it merited it. It being so close to Central, we have a lot of the park amenities. within, you know, walking, biking distance, and of course Alpine Park, not too far to the west. At one point, a couple residents were interested in an outdoor archery range, and that's something that we thought could work with some berming and then elevated shooting structures there for archery only. So in other words, you'd be in an elevated stand and you'd have a roof and walls in the back such that you can only shoot downrange for practicing for deer hunting. That's one thing that may work. The park was platted in the 1980s at such time as the adjoining properties were platted, also at about 5 acres, and that's a time when horses were very popular. So we actually had a riding arena there until the late 1980s, and then we dismantled that as less and less Ramsey residents had horses.
It became a dirt bike.
A little bit of that, and then we used it for many of our construction projects for material hauling and transport. Metropolitan Mosquito Control now operates their chopper out of there for serving Ramsey resident, but as Brian alluded to, its highest and best use of recent decades had been when we had the big windstorms, straight line winds, where we had community drop-off sites where we drop tree, you know, tree, whole trees, branches, and then bring in a tub grinder as a community service.
Interesting.
Jenna?
So then, thank you. And so with this tower, because it's only taking up a 200-foot by 200-foot zone out of this 4.5 acres, would that really inhibit the other uses that we're currently using it for?
The other uses that we're currently using it for? No. It probably wouldn't inhibit many of the other parking uses that are potentially available there. I can't speak to any concern that Metropolitan Mosquito Control would have relative to using their choppers near that tower, but they're used to working around high lines and everything all across the city as they treat wetlands, so I don't even know if that would be an impediment.
And we mentioned this to mosquito control folks, and you know, they didn't have an immediate concern. You know, if it didn't work for them, we would look for someplace else that might work.
Kirsten.
I wanted to say, I share like a similar sentiment to other folks here that I don't feel like it's a loss if we don't get it. And I think we should explore creative ideas like Brian had mentioned to try and get more money out of it. But if we can't get market value, I think we should think about what the financial impact is about accepting something that's below market value. I think it's more of their loss than ours to not have this. And the other thought, though, I will say is that, you know, if we don't have this happen, is there a risk of private cell tower being constructed outside of city oversight, I would like to try and keep parkland, as much parkland as we can, too, though. So, I mean, I find other ways. I'd love to see us try and make this work out for us financially, but if it's a loss, it's a loss.
Thank you.
Just quickly respond. So, yeah there's a... There would be an opportunity that a private property could go forward with it. It would require a land use application. I can't remember off the top of my head what districts allow this type of use, but I do believe it's a conditional use in all districts. So it would require a public hearing, planning commission, mailers directly to properties within so many feet around the proposed property. So the public would be aware of it. As a conditional use within that district, it's not something that the city could say no to, but you can set reasonable restrictions to it. I don't know what they would be on a cell tower, maybe height and things like that, but if someone just opted to rent out the back 40 on their property and a cell tower starts to get built, we would notice it and we would shut it down and make them go through the correct channels.
Well, I am for not allowing it. I could be persuaded to go back with a very high number and tell them we're not accepting anything less than this, but my personal preference, I don't think the benefit outweighs some of the drawbacks. So looking for input from other people. Jenna.
Question. So help me understand. We are, if this was, okay, go back, we get this better price, and it comes through, the citizens around the property get mailers, and they would have the opinion or option to come to a city councilman meeting and shut this down, saying we don't want it in our backyard, correct?
They could try.
I'll answer in kind of two ways. If it proceeds forward on city-owned land, we would not execute the lease at a time where the lease is now in effect and it's in essence giving them the rights to move forward under the conditional use permit. Because again, you can't deny a conditional use permit unless they don't agree to those terms. I would suggest we hold a targeted neighborhood meeting, whether we invite them here to City Hall or we meet them up at Central Park somewhere closer to them and say, hey, come give us your feedback. Here's what we know so far. Here's the height. Here's the location, what it would look like. And gather that community feedback before council would move forward on agreeing to the lease or not. In the meantime, we could negotiate a better lease and have that information available too for the public, of saying, hey, you know, here's the revenue, here's maybe some ideas that we're thinking about using the revenue for. Does that change your mind? Things like that. If they move forward on private property, the residents would still get the same land use application process, be able to show up to meetings and give their input, but at that point, again, it's not that you could really say no, you could just incorporate their input to lessen the impact on it.
That was helpful.
Yep. Kirsten?
I personally like the idea of like what Brian has proposed, like where we keep trying to negotiate. If they don't want to negotiate, then we don't have to move forward. But while we're negotiating, we can still bring it to the community to get their perspective. And even if we hit the number we want, if they don't like it, we can stop it. If they do, we can move forward. Then we're not, you know, completely pushing it out without having a better perspective of the folks that this is actually impacting.
Michael.
Thank you. I'm personally not a huge fan. Particularly at the price point. I agree that the cut the cost benefit just isn't there. I can be persuaded. But I think community support is going to be huge, because the people who are going to be around there, if they are for it, that's going to carry a lot of weight in my mind.
I don't want to speak for residents or assume I understand what they're thinking, but I think we could all pause for a moment and say, if the city let us know they're going to be building a cell tower near us, would you like to come and give input? And even if the city said we're making $50,000 a year, I can't personally imagine a bunch of residents are going to come out and say, you know what, if the city's making $50,000 a year, I'm okay with seeing that. So I do like the idea of community input. However, if we're saying if the majority of the community rejecting this idea would sway our decision, I don't even know if we need to go that route, because I just can't imagine the majority of people coming into a listening session or learning session being like, you know, I would really like a cell phone tower in my backyard. I can't imagine that. So I just want people to think about that, too. I feel like that's kind of a moot point in my mind. If everybody thinks they're very excited for a cell phone tower, maybe I'm the one out, but I can see that. Just creating issues, and now we're just fighting a PR battle for something that we are not going to do anyway if they're against it. Kirsten?
I mean, I think we've held meetings for less, you know, reasons that are good, right? I think if we can put into perspective what the potential funding source will provide our city, maybe that'll be a better benefit. I agree with you, like, when we're talking about building anything, like, people aren't going to be happy, and it's always the people that are unhappy that show up to things, not the people that are happy, right? But I don't want to speak for everyone in this space, but my goal was to try and make sure that our citizens are present at the table more often about conversations that maybe oftentimes happen behind closed doors. And so at the very least, they are aware of opportunities for us to find funding sources outside of tax revenue and understand what, you know, players are at the table coming to our city to ask to be a part of our city to gain revenue. So even at the end of the day, if it's a no, like, it opens us up to that dialogue with our community members to share what things we are doing.
I would agree with most of that. I just think beware of unintended consequences, because you can open up a whole can, and then if we all believe that there's a great chance the majority of people will come and support it, I think we could open it up to the community. If we all have a hunch that it's not going to be a popular idea, then putting it out to the residents is just opening up a whole can of worms. So once again, I don't know their minds. That's what I said in the beginning. I can't speak for them. I just know personally, if it came to me, I wouldn't be a huge fan. So we can do that. I'm just saying we should be aware for the Facebook posts and everything saying, you know, creating a mountain out of a molehill kind of deal. So just a heads up, if we decide to move forward with the community input, we're gonna get community input. So, yeah.
What we have it on? What other park? And what was the history?
Alpine.
Alpine's been there 20 years.
What was our?
You were here.
Of course.
Is that before it was a park and it was just a landfill?
No, it was indeed a park, and it was proposed actually on the west side. And the west side neighbors were a little bit more vociferous than the folks across from Alpine Drive. And so it indeed landed in the center of the park. It probably helped that they understood at the time that some of the revenue was going to the park system. That may have helped a little bit. Mayor, I'd also add that having my ear to the ground, I think you summarized what we can expect residents would say. The only caveat to that is that if that listening session didn't occur, and then the cell tower was proposed on the 40 acres immediately to the south on the Hanson Tree Farm, then some of the same residents may say, how did you let this happen? But yeah, it would not be.
And if we move forward with a community listening session, you know, we can put together maps and figures to show, okay, if it doesn't happen here, here's where it could. Again, and reiterate that even if you're against it now and the city says no to this, it could happen in these locations, and that'd be easy enough to put together.
What are we thinking?
Renegotiate.
Do we have a price that we want to be at to make it worth it?
What's our Alpine's? How much are they renting? Is this 200 by 200?
It's probably about the same spot space.
Same space.
And then even at Alpine, isn't that where we put the dog park?
Yeah, one of the stipulations of siting that tower is not only the lease revenue, but we required them to pave a 10-foot bituminous trail for maintenance purpose to the tower so they wouldn't run up the park. And then that trail also benefited the off-leash area, in that users can walk their dog in that area during muddy periods and not have to get off the trail. And then it also became a little bit more ADA compliant too.
Chris? No, I think there are two that we have right now is $26,400 per year and $24,000 per year.
Yeah.
That would be my ask.
Your target. I also think it would be, if the site is still available for other services, maybe a good idea would be to imagine what else we could use that lease money for. Because if we're going to ask residents to put a cell phone tower, maybe we can tell them it's a cell phone tower, and with that proceeds, we're going to put it in an archery range or something. Because just money going to the general budget, I feel like you're going to lose some people. If you can say this is the service the cell phone tower is going to provide, then maybe that would be more advantageous and create more of a carrot for them rather than the stick.
Is it safe to say if they don't come back and come close to or at our recent market value that we're not going to do the community get together?
Yes.
Yeah.
What number is that in your mind?
Right now, as Chris mentioned, it's 26 grand a year and some change, and 24 grand a year and some change on our two recent ones. See what they come back with getting closer to that. I really like the upfront kind of, we'll say, bonus payment from the one that gave us 25 grand up front. The other one is I think it sounded really good on paper as I'm looking back on it now, but they guaranteed 5 years of rep revenue. The reality of them going away was probably next to nothing, so it doesn't cost them anything extra, but it looked really good to us. So somewhere in there, and then comparable future increases, I think we can get a little closer on the additional carrier one. You know, a broad number is they need to double it.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk.
Okay.
No. Oh, all right. We're good on that one then?
Thank
all right. So I just lost my tab here. Moving on to item number three. Continue review of the draft rental housing leasing inspection policy.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. So, again, it's a continuation. The end of November, City Council discussed just the first couple pages of this draft policy. Again, it's a policy that outlines the procedures for the rental inspections program. Attached is a draft of the policy. I think it's a redlined version, actually, with things that had been proposed to be removed by previous council and stuff that's been added. And I think we've got through, like, the first two pages of it, possibly. Again, this is a policy that staff really supports, too. We thought it would be very nice, too, to have this policy of how the rental housing program works when we're taking in applications, you know, how backgrounds are being checked, how inspections are being scheduled, the inspection itself and such. So we do believe this is a very important document. Once this policy is ready to go, it would be adopted by City Council through resolution. So this time I'm just looking for City Council's input in it. We would like to bring it back to the February 11th City Council meeting, either in the form of more discussion of the policy or for actual formal.
All right. Chris.
Well, I really like the fact of us shifting gears kind of and making this a policy so we don't have to keep trying to tweak our ordinance and debating that on the dais. We can kind of debate the policy here and make it a more fluid document to meet our needs, seeing as how we already jumped the gun, want to change it, but we're not sure what we want to change it to. And so I like that idea. I support what's done here. I think our rental housing licensing is important to keep our rental stock in good shape. If the city's going to have the apartments and the rental, I do think we need to manage, you know, have it managed and make sure that it stays in good shape.
Shannon?
I'm completely against any inspection of tenants. I feel like it's big violation of tenant rights, but I might be the minority in this room, so I do have lots of notes for these pages.
Do you want to go over those?
We have plenty of time.
Do you want to share some of those thoughts? Some of the
do
notes.
We have a different way of doing this, or how do you want to? what I was thinking is, could we get everybody's thoughts on the policy itself first and then go back and just go page for page?
Sure. All right, so we'll continue around with our general thoughts on the policy and then we'll dive into some of the details.
Yeah, I mean, or
yep.
Ryan, City Administrator Hagan. Yeah, you know, overall, I do like the idea of, you know, we saw a lot of examples of, you know, rental units that were in pretty bad shape and some of the things that they found already and had success with. We also did hear the people that came and the gentleman and that came and spoke about, you know, the rights and you know, they didn't want to have their closet gone through, and we talked about some making some accommodations for those and maybe working around that. So overall, kind of like my brother, I do like the idea of having the policy just in that I think it does protect tenants' rights and the fact that, you know, some examples we heard about in the beginning were, you know, sometimes tenants don't feel enabled or empowered to stand up for themselves. And, you know, it's just once a year, and then they could go to, you know, there's different ways we could do it. But then if they do well, every 3 years, 5 years, or, you know, change the policy those ways. So overall, I think it's a good way to keep things looking nice. But I'm definitely open to hear changes and ways to make it more, you know, tenant rights friendly and things. But overall, I think it's a good idea to have.
Yeah. Michael.
Thank you. I was pretty vocal about my opposition to this whole thing when we discussed it before. And then I had a conversation with a sister-in-law, and she met her, and she was just very much in favor of this kind of thing, which skewed my perception a little bit. I don't know if there's a way to do this, but I think the ideal scenario in my mind would be that this is a benefit that's offered as opposed to something that feels imposed. And like I said, I don't know how that could be structured to make it viable, but that would be my preference. The content of what I see here, I like it for the most part, and I do see the benefit. So I'm kind of on the fence, but I started off, I think, right where you are. It just feels like, you know, if this was the federal government, come knocking on your door and say, hey, I'm going to come in and take a look around. We'd be like, ugh. So why should the city be any different? So I guess that's where, and I've got some little tweaks, but.
Eric. So I all my travels, I've been a renter for probably half of my life. And never having this benefit in any city or place I've ever lived in before. This is actually, I think, a great thing. A good thing. To have the city take some sort of vested interest in ensuring that their rental communities don't dilapidate and become cesspools or start inviting the wrong types of folks we don't want in our community. Or maybe helping people to understand, like, that's not how you should live. Maybe having mold all over the place, it probably isn't a good thing. Maybe even the person that rents renting the place out may not even know that exists too, so it's a benefit to the leasee also, the leaser, so the person who owns the property. And I know that I used to work in inspections in the military. You expect what you inspect. If we're not inspecting, we shouldn't expect our communities to be kept up.
Kirsten.
I agree that this is something that we should have on the books. I think people concerned about their rights as tenants is the exception, not like the common factor is why this exists, right? I think this is on the intent of this is to protect them and the safety of the tenants. And I understand people's concern about, you know, being in people's private spaces, but when you think about what people can and can't do, like, you have the understanding as someone that is renting a space that when you rent that space, you are going to have inspections that are to your benefit and not to your detriment. And not to be crude here, but if you are a renter and someone's coming in, you have a heads up, and if you need to hide your drugs, you need to hide whatever you need to hide from people, go ahead and do it. Like, you know what spaces they're going to be going into. They're not going into your drawers, right? Like, I don't know what, you know, that's just my frank thought on this, right? And if you don't like inspections, and that is a common theme in rental housing, then that means that you may have to find a different space to live in. That's my thought. I mean, we can also look at ways to make it less, you know, where we're not going into spaces that are potentially harmful, but you have to go into bedrooms, you have to see if people have fire detectors, you have to see if they have certain things, so there's only so much you can do, and this can't be something that's like an opt-out, opt-in thing. So, you know, I think this policy is good. How can we make it so it works the best for most?
I guess my thought is this written in a way that it protects the property owner or the renter, or was it written in a way to try to just try to think who it serves? Does it serve the renter? Does it serve the property owner? Does it serve both? Like, what's the fix we're trying to address here?
Okay. Our whole goal when we was doing this is for it to work for the renter.
the property owner and for the city. I mean, to cover us as well. We're going in there and we're doing these inspections. We want to make sure that we have a process that every person follows. This is our application process, this is our background, just for accountability with city staff as well.
Okay. Would you like to share some of your thoughts that you have?
Yeah.
That's more.
I'm not a fan of this. I understand that the lawsuits have said, yes, it's constitutional, Supreme Court, all that fun stuff. However, if we can make this smaller, easier for our landlords, for our tenants, having people go into their closets for a ceiling check is not something you should be going into. Your fire detector, or it should be right within 16 to 18 inches from that doorway. They do not need to go in around the bed, over by the things. Yes, they need to check the window, but why they're opening even the closet up. I think we need to really pull back on where the inspector is going in these homes. I do that because of, we're not just hiding drugs. I get that's a one of them. If you know you have an inspection, you hide that stuff, you hide your illegal stuff, right? And most people do. We're talking about, what about that woman that just got out of some sort of issue, and now you're having a man come through, plus the landlord coming into their room, into their spaces. They're opening up the closets. I don't think that's okay. Even guys coming out of those issues. And you're going to say, oh, it's okay to have this man or woman coming into your place with all this authority, and we're going to open up that closet. And what's to stop them from doing anything else if they're in agreement to do anything else? That inspector will be on payroll for city, yes. But what if those two people are at a bar together and they're just buddies and they like to go through stuff? I think we need to really scale this back to make it safe for the tenant while also doing what you're suggesting. We need to make sure the property stays up, and we need to make sure that it looks good for the city, it looks good for the landlord, it looks good for the tenant. So we need to scale back. This is what my true feelings are.
Is there in the pre-inspection checklist, is there things you suggest we remove to accommodate that? So I agree with your point that there needs to be a reason behind everything, and that reason needs to be, not that they're not valid already, but they need to be validated through the lens of privacy and security and things of that nature. So I guess my question would be, is there things we should remove from the pre-inspection checklist where we can give the resident this checklist and say, these are the reasons we're going into these spaces, and anything outside of what's on this list, you should not have, like, they shouldn't be touched. Like, give them the assurance that we don't need to go into a closet. And, you know, maybe if there is a attic access in a closet, then we need to say, like, we're only going into that closet for that reason, to kind of dispel some of those issues. Is that a way you think we could move forward with that? Go ahead.
One thing I do want to say is, when they are going into people's closets, what they specifically are looking at is just the ceiling. I mean, staff does not touch anything and anybody's property at all. We're not moving anything. It's specifically looking up at the ceiling to see if there's leaks coming up from, you know, the roof or the apartments above or anything like that.
Yeah, I understand that.
We are hands off, though. I mean, nothing is ever moved or.
Yeah, I understand that to the degree, though, is. I'll get to you in 1 second, Chris. I guess my thought is checking every closet ceiling pertinent? I mean, I feel like you can tell if the house is in disrepair without. By being in the room, not necessarily the closet. So having a safe space where you feel like not every nook and cranny is getting looked into is kind of what I was thinking. Chris?
I kind of reiterate the same thing. I mean, the closets keep coming up, so I guess I would just suggest we just make the closets off limit for all the reasons that you just said.
Michael, did you have a...
Well, Chris, as long as you're asking me, Garden closets, it seems like it's a pretty small percentage of the ceiling.
Right.
If you're going to have a water leak that's limited to the closet, that'd be pretty rare, I think.
Yeah. Right.
I think the resident would actually say something.
Well, actually, right.
Mm-hmm. Kirsten?
Yeah, the closet thing was my thought was like water damage. Like that's typically where maybe you would see that water damage in the ceiling, which is why you want to look at that. And I also just like want to share that this was like modeled after similar initiatives in other communities. This is not something that like is, you know, harsher than other surrounding communities. And I don't want to start creating policies based on potential bad personnel. Like I'm not going to want us to create a policy for our police department because we could potentially have a bad police officer, you know. So I don't want to be like, let's create this policy just in case someone wants to touch something and tell someone at Outpost on Friday. So, and I do think that there's other avenues of us like advocating for tenants' rights as well as landowners or property owners' rights by having open dialogue, sharing with them how to have, you know, communicative systems to talk to each other about potentially things that could be going on in each other's lives, or them having an avenue to talk to us about that, you know, sharing like, hey, I hear there's an inspection coming up, I know the city's coming, can I share with you? And obviously there's within comfort, right? You know, there was mention of potentially a DV situation in which, you know, now we have comfort issues around males. We could have female inspectors. I don't know. You know, like, there's bigger things that could be thought of to protect people that don't also lessen what we're doing to make sure that they also are covered at the same time.
Thank you. I think the spirit of this is to make sure it's a safe environment and that people aren't that renters aren't taking advantage of the property owners and property owners aren't taking advantage of the renters. I think that's, in my opinion, the spirit of this policy. So I think making exceptions for things like closets and things of that nature does make sense because it meets the intention of the policy. Because if you check every ceiling except for the closets and there happens to be one closet with a little bit of water damage, I feel like that chance is so low that opening up the door and say free range of the entire house without exception, I don't think it's warranted. So I think making some exceptions that give homeowners some security and some privacy makes sense. And honestly, if it's a closet space where they feel like they're have some privacy, then I'm okay with that. Dan?
Yeah, thank you. Ryan?
administrator.
So I guess a couple thoughts I have. I want to clarify, to me, it's not about a trust issue with our staff. And I know we have amazing staff, and in no way was I insinuating that anyway, or it's a matter of protecting people that are hiding drugs. Again, that's not a thing. I don't think there's a reason to say government, you know, the only reason I don't want government to infringe upon my rights is because I might have drugs. Well, no, to me it's a bigger issue of individual property rights, rights about search and seizure that's improper. So I absolutely, and I appreciate these points. It brings up a lot of thought, and I agree with you with everything you've said so far. And that, so again, it is this balance of, so it's about the individual's rights. It's not about thinking our staff's bad or that these people are hiding drugs or something. I think it's an unfair characterization of our residents. I think it's unfair characterization of what we're saying here and our staff. I mean, they're amazing people. To even insinuate that. So to me, I'm really struggling with, you know, we've heard examples of, you know, people that it may be a language barrier, it might be a culture barrier, it might be, you know, they don't have anywhere else to go, so they're afraid to tell the landlord of stuff they see. So that they're living in situations they shouldn't. So how do we help enable them to get out of that and help fix that, you know, where we also don't want to violate anyone's individual rights if they don't want that. So I think a scale back of some kind of inspection would still be good, but I'm wholeheartedly fine if closets might be an issue or if there is a much more scaled down checklist where I think, as Ryan was saying, you know, if you go in there and you can kind of maybe get a sense overall of, you know, there's probably a lot more going on than just these five things in the checklist, then, you know, I'm sure there's something in place you can, you know, to figure out how to engage at that next level of you know, discussing it or looking into it. But I'd be okay with a scaled-down model of some kind. But I think, just from the stories you referred, I think it'd be good to have something in place to just ensure, you know, place are being upkept and good.
I think from my time when I was in college for criminal justice, and you can correct me here if I'm wrong, when you get a warrant for a missing ATV, you can't open up the drawers of the dressers because an ATV couldn't fit in that dress, that drawer, right? So there is limitations, right? So I think that same spirit applies to this in the sense that you're there to check for certain things and things that would fall outside of that, there's no reason to go through. So if you're going to check to make sure the house is in good repair and that there isn't damage and the sinks aren't leaking and things of that nature, then that can be your target. And going into as minute details of going into closets to check a ceiling, like the probability of that is so low. I just think the spirit of it is we're going in to check to make sure things look good. If we can do that as unintrusively as possible, that's the word, then I think that should be our goal. We should go wide, and then if we need to escalate, then we go narrow. Kirsten.
I just have one question for the staff in the room. How many complaints have you received that people feel that this is an overly restrictive policy?
So far, one.
Okay, so...
Yeah, we had, Dan alluded to it earlier, we had last year a situation where an apartment renter, you know, completely disagreed with letting the city in, and to be honest, before it even hit council, we had already at the staff level fixed it. He indicated that they were moving out in a few months, and we said, perfect, we'll forget about it. You know, apartment complex manager, let us know when they're gone. We'll come back and check the unit then. But they still came to council, raised up a number of these concerns, and that's what brought us here today. I'll just go back a couple years when we brought on a new code enforcement person. In general, our code enforcement moved forward at the city level. The position prior to that, it was kind of a dual city planner code enforcement role, and not a real great emphasis on the true code enforcement. So our process moved forward, and with that, we started to receive more and more calls from renters, and that's what really took a strategic plan item that had been on the list for a number of years on crime-free multifamily housing and push forward this rental housing license update. And then we added just a rental housing inspector, and person's been busy. We have over 1,000 units in the city. So, you know, to be honest, from the staff level, we actually supported the council saying don't do this every year because we probably wouldn't have been able to keep up with that. So to change it every 3 years or as requested is definitely supported. And generally speaking, we do see a support from the residents on this. But as you guys are discussing, to what level for now?
So sometimes we can get in these discussions and it can be a moot point if some of us, the majority of people are already okay with it. So any other thoughts to share? Otherwise, I'll just gauge, because if it's two people that are want to go through this and revise it, but five people are already on board with it, then we should just figure that out now and save some time. So do we have a idea as presented? Does this look good? Chris?
Good.
Kirsten?
Good.
Dan?
I guess I personally would like to hear the detail, and that, you know, even if overall ideas things are good, I think there's maybe minute aspects that we could improve on it. So I would not support it until I hear more detail.
Okay.
I agree.
Eric? Good. Michael? You want to?
Great. 3-3.
Continue to discuss it, or should we?
With the taking out the closet inspections.
Right. We're discussing this.
Yeah.
Right? That's what.
Yeah, I'm just trying to gauge if it's only three of us and four people have made up their mind,
right,
then continuing discussing it won't get us too much farther.
Yeah, I think some more discussion is good.
Okay. So with the time that we have left and more discussion needed, is this something we can push back to the next work session?
Yeah, we can bring this back to the next work session or after that, depending on other items needed next session, but we'll, in the meantime, we'll come back and scale it down a little bit more even and bring that back for your guys' final thoughts. In the meantime, though, if you want to email that to Stephanie,
sure.
We can go through and just start to think about what your thoughts or questions are and maybe use that a little bit too. That'd be helpful and be a little bit more productive next time.
And we still have 10 minutes, so is there anything else you want to discuss? I'll get to you, Eric, in a second.
I would like to 10 minutes to just kind of talk about next meeting,
sure.
And things like that, or close to 10 minutes.
With open meeting laws, you can't share your thoughts with the rest of us outside. So is there any quick synopsis or anything you want to touch base on real quick? Or do you just want to send them to Stephanie? We'll talk about it next time.
I'll chat with Stephanie and Brian, and that'll okay. Be fine. And then I just, for the lovely record of all of this, I was not insinuating our staff that's currently on. I'm just saying there are evils and people can get turned.
Oh, definitely.
So it wasn't a
pow
on anybody. It was just a scenario.
I didn't take it that way.
Okay.
Brian's evil.
Yeah. Anything else real quick?
Are we done with this?
Yes.
Okay. So I had a couple folks outside here ask me about the state flag. And some are for it, some are against it. It's the official one. I know by... We do not have to adopt the current state flag. I looked it up. But here's another thing. We don't have a city flag.
Should we discuss that on future topics?
Yeah, so kind of what we could do is...
We'll get to it.
You know, I think work session, you guys can do a quick direction change if you guys see it's a quick discussion, or we can add it to the next one.
Okay.
So, thoughts on... You guys want to make a quick decision tonight on that or bring back another discussion?
We want to talk about flags coming up.
I don't think we need to talk about it, but just my opinion.
That's a perfectly good topic. I don't feel strongly about it either way. But.
I don't know, but maybe we were because I did get an email from a concerned citizen about the fact that we've got the old flag, and they're very adamant that we need the new one. And Brian brought up a great suggestion of why don't we just not have a flag for a while? And I'm like, that might cure all of this. So
feels like we're having that discussion.
Yeah.
You tell us to hop to quit.
Let's add the flag discussion to future work session.
Great, we have a city flag.
All right, so we are now in the working session. Is that we wanted some time for?
Yeah, so just to note, we've got last year, even slightly more than that, the Ramsey Foundation approached us with kind of a donation to create a community art plan, so we're going to bring that to the next work session, go through that, and see what they came up with and how we could incorporate that and add art throughout the city, recognizing some art that we already have, different forms of art, etc. And then two items that have been on this list for a while, and I don't know if there would be a ton of discussion behind them at all, but talking about our remote meeting policy for boards, commission members, and council, what that looks like. It got implemented through COVID, and it's been long enough where do we just make it permanent, or does it need to be tweaked? And then mainly because there's... Sorry, I joke that we have 3.5 new council members because you were on council and you kind of get it, but you're new to mayor. So we have a large changeover of council, so just a discussion, and a number of the new members have asked, how do we get stuff on the agenda? So we'll go through that next meeting and kind of get on the same page for that. And then when you look at this future topic, staff tries to estimate how long it'll take. Sometimes we're really good guessers, sometimes we're not. So I'll say tonight I was not a good guesser on these topics would take, but so that's just kind of how to look at this. And again, next meeting we'll kind of talk about, you know, if you guys have something you want to discuss, how do we get it on the agendas. I'll note that it's difficult for staff to put together good quality cases with a few days notice.
You've done great, come on.
We make it happen, and we will make it happen, but you know, it's something where I'd love to see. You know, ideally, we get a couple weeks, you know, so like tonight is perfect. Hey, can we talk about the flags? Go through, majority of council or enough of council says, yep, sure, and then we'll set a date so we can put together some information for you. So.
All right. We're on time. With that being said,
Mr. Mayor?
Oh, yes.
Mr. Ryan?
Yes, go ahead.
So I was talking to my good colleague here, Member Riley.
Best colleague.
And we've been around here for a little while.
Yeah.
One thing that was we found beneficial and that I actually wanted to get rid of last year was food here. I'm wasting away nothing here, but you're talking about when you're coming from work, there's a time to stop and grab something. You know, it's pretty much been, we've had food for, 20 years, sure, they've had different food, you know.
So we should add that to future topics.
Something to discuss if they want to bring back. It's like a $4,000 budget item that I changed my mind on. I thought it'd be a good idea to get rid of it. I'm like, yeah, you know, I miss it, so.
We add that to future topics.
Yeah, we can do that.
Put an hour on that.
Yes, easily.
Come on, food. And bring food.
Yeah.
All right, with that, we are adjourned.
It could be a lunch of murder.